disarranged months. As a result of repeated perturbations, the Earth changed from an orbit of 360 days duration to one of 365 and a quarter days, the days probably not being exactly equal in both cases. The month changed from 30 to 29 and a half days. These were the values at the beginning and at the end of the century of, quote, the Battle of the Gods. As a result of the perturbations of this century, there were intermediary values of the year and the month. The length of the year probably ranged between 360 and 365 and a quarter days, but the moon, being a smaller or weaker body than the Earth, suffered greater perturbations from the contacting body, and the intermediate values of the month could have been subjected to greater changes. Plutarch declares that in the time of Romulus, the people were, quote, irrational and irregular in their fixing of the months, and reckoned some months at 35 days and some more, trying to keep to a year of 360 days, and that Numa, Romulus's successor, corrected the irregularities of the calendar and also changed the order of the months. This statement suggests the question, might it not have been that during the period between consecutive catastrophes, the moon receded to an orbit of 35 or 36 days duration? If, in the period of confusion, the moon actually changed for a while to such an orbit, it must have been an eclipse or a circle of a radius larger than before. In the latter case, each of the four moon phases must have been of 9 days duration. It is of interest, therefore, to read that in many sagas dealing with the moon, the number 9 is used in measures of time. Here we have a relevant footnote. Quote, the number 9 occurs conspicuously in so many sagas which, for other reasons, I recognize to be moon sagas, that I am convinced that the holiness of this number has its origin in its very ancient application in time division. End quote. The author of this package, E. Siecki, from Die Liebeschicht des Himmels, Untersuchungen der Indermannischen Sagenkunde, 1892, did not suppose a change in the nature of the lunar cycles, and also was not aware of the work of the scholar referred to in the following footnote, yet he was forced to believe that 9 was connected with the time subdivision of a month. Back to the original text, a series of scholars found that 9 days was for a while a time period of many ancient peoples, the Hindus, the Persians, the Babylonians, the Egyptians, and the Chinese. In religious traditions, literature, and astrological works, 7 days and 9 days compete as the measure of the month's quarter. In the time of the Homeric epics, the 9-day week became prevalent in the Greek world. The 7-day week and the 9-day week are both found in Homer. The Romans, too, retained the recollection of a time when the week had been of 9 days duration. The change from a 7-day phase to a 9-day phase is found in the traditions of the people of Romania, Lithuania, and Sardinia, and among the Celts of Europe, the Mongols of Asia, and the tribes of West Africa. In order to explain this strange phenomenon in time reckoning, obviously connected with the moon, the suggestion was made that, in addition to the 7-day phase of the moon, a 9-day phase was also observed, which is a third of the month. But this idea must be rejected, because a third part of a month of 29 and a half days would more nearly be 10 days and not 9. Here we have a relevant footnote. The sidereal month, or the period of time during which the moon completes a revolution in relation to the fixed stars, is 27 days, 7 hours, 43 minutes. But the phases of the moon change according to the synodical month of 29 days, 12 hours, 44 minutes. After a synodical month, the moon returns to the same position in relation to the sun as viewed from the Earth. Back to the original text. Besides, the quarter month phases are easily observable periods during which the moon increases from new moon to half moon to full moon and then decreases accordingly, but a 9-day period falls between these phases. Therefore, and in view of the vast material from many peoples, we conclude that at one time during the century of perturbations, for a period between two catastrophes, the moon receded to an orbit of 35 to 36 days duration. It remained on such an orbit for a few decades until, at the next upheaval, it was carried to an orbit of 29.5 days duration, on which it has proceeded since then. These perturbed months occurred in the second half of the 8th century at the beginning of Roman history. It was probably these changes that caused the gods in the clouds of Aristophanes to accuse the moon of having brought disorder in the calendar and in the cult. In Aristophanes, the clouds. What is more, we have actual dates like, quote, the 33rd day of the month cited in the Babylonian tablets of that period. Thus, the month, which was equal to 30 days, changed to 36 and then to 29.5 days. The last change was simultaneous with the change of the terrestrial orbit to one of 365.25 days duration. Years of 10 months. When the month was about 36 days and the year between 360 and 365.25 days, the year must have been composed of only 10 months. This was the case. According to many classical authors, in the days of Romulus, the year consisted of 10 months, and in the time of Numa, his successor, 2 months were added, January and February. Ovid writes, "When the founder of the city, Rome, was setting the calendar in order, he ordained that there should be twice 5 months in his year. He gave his laws to regulate the year. The month of Mars was the first, and that of Venus the second, but Numa overlooked not Janus and the ancestral shades, February, and so to the ancient months he prefixed two." Geminus, a Greek astronomer of the first century before the present era, says similarly that it was Romulus who, in the 8th century, established the year of 10 months. Aulus Gellius, a 2nd century author, writes in his Attic Nights, "The year was composed not of 12 months, but of 10. Plutarch remarks that in his day there was a belief that the Romans, in the time of Romulus, computed the year, quote, not in 12 months, but in 10, by adding more than 30 days to some of the months. End quote. At the beginning of Numa's reign, the 10-month year was still the official one. Quote, March was considered the first month until the reign of Numa, the full year before that time containing 10 months, wrote Procopius of Caesarea, who lived in the closing years of the Roman Empire. The fact that, in Romulus's time, the first month was named in honor of Mars and the second in honor of Venus shows the importance of these two deities in that period of history. July was named Quintilis, the fifth. The difference of 2 months still survives in the names of September, October, November, and December, which denote the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th months. But according to the present-day reckoning, they are the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th months, respectively. Not only was the year divided into fewer than 12 months, but also the zodiac, or the path of the sun and the moon across the firmament, at present consisting of 12 signs, at one time had 11, and at another time, 10 signs. A zodiac of fewer than 12 signs was employed by the astrologers of Babylonia, ancient Greece, and other countries. A Jewish song in the Aramaic language, which is included in the Seder service, refers to 11 constellations of the zodiac. The calendars of the primitive peoples disclose their early origin by the fact that many of them are composed of 10 months and some of 11 months. If the time of the lunar revolution was 35 days and some hours, the year was something over 10 months long. The Yurak Samoyeds reckon 11 months to the year. The natives of Formosa, too, have a year of 11 months. The year of the Kamchadals is made up of 10 months, quote, one of which is said to be as long as 3. The inhabitants of the Kingsmill Islands in the Pacific, also called the Gilbert Islands, near the equator, use a 10-month period for their year. In the Marquesas, in Polynesia, south of the equator, 10 months form a year, tau, or puni, but the actual year of 365 days is also known. The Toraja of the Dutch East Indies compute time in moon months. Each year, however, a period of 2 or 3 months is not brought into the computation at all and is omitted in time reckoning. The Chams of Indochina have a calendar of only 10 months to the year. The natives in some islands of the Indian Ocean also observe 10 months to the year. The Aborigines of New Zealand do not count 2 months in the year. Quote, these 2 months are not in the calendar. They do not reckon them, nor are they in any way accounted for. Among the Yoruba of South Nigeria, the 3 months, February, March, April, are generally given no specific name. These calendars of primitive peoples are similar to the old Roman calendar. They were not invented in disregard of the solar year. Quote, years with less than 12 months are to us the strangest of phenomena, said Nilsson in Primitive Time Reckoning. Their fault is that they are more constant than the revolution of the Earth on her orbit around the Sun. The work of adapting the old systems to a new order is still evident in the systems of the Aborigines of Kamchatka, South Nigeria, the Dutch East Indies, and New Zealand. Instead of introducing two additional months, as in the reform of Numa, one of the months is extended to triple its length, or a period equivalent to 2 months is not counted at all in the calendric system. The abundance of proofs of the existence of a 10-month year is even embarrassing. Since the period when the year was composed of 10 months of 35 to 36 days each was short, how could this 10-month year leave so many vestiges in the calendar systems all over the world? The answer to this question will become simple when we shall find that this was the second time in the history of the world that the year was composed of 10 months. In a much earlier age, when the year was of an entirely different length, one revolution of the Earth was also equal to 10 revolutions of the Moon. We shall trace this period in history in a succeeding volume of this work, The Reforming of the Calendar. In the middle of the 8th century, the calendar then in use became obsolete. From the year 747 BC until the last of the catastrophes on the 23rd of March, 687 BC, the solar and lunar movements changed repeatedly, necessitating adjustments of the calendar. Reforms undertaken during this time soon became obsolete in their turn and were replaced by new ones. Only after the last catastrophe of 687 BC, when the present world order was established, did the calendar become permanent. Some of the clay tablets of Nineveh found in the royal library of that city contain astronomical observations made during the period before the present order in the planetary system was established. One tablet fixes the day of the vernal equinox as the 6th of Nisan. Quote, on the 6th of the month of Nisan, the day and night are equal. Incidentally, the palace of Nineveh was the residence of Sargon II, Sennacherib, Esarhaddon, and Assurbanipal. But another tablet places the equinox on the 15th of Nisan. We cannot explain the difference, wrote a scholar. Judging by the accurate methods employed and the precision achieved in their observations, the stargazers of Nineveh would not have erred by 9 days. In the astronomical tablets of Nineveh, quote, three systems of planets are extensively represented. Single planets are followed in all their movements in the three different schedules. For the movements of the moon, there are two different systems. Each of these systems is carried out down to the smallest detail, but only the last system of the planets and of the moon conforms to the present world order. According to tablet number 93, the perihelion, or the point on the Earth's orbit that is nearest the Sun, is defined as the 20th degree of the sign of the zodiac called the Archer. At aphelion, when the Earth is farthest from the Sun is said to be at the 20th degree of Gemini. Accordingly, these points are designated as stations of the fastest and slowest solar motion. Quote, but the real position of the apsides decidedly contradicts these statements. End quote. Another tablet, number 272, 70 years younger than the first, gives very different data for the perihelion and aphelion, and scholars wonder at this. All the numerous data on solar movements in one of the systems leads to one and the same conclusion. Quote, the solstitial and equinoctial points of the ecliptic lay 6 degrees too far to the east. The distances traveled by the moon on the Chaldean ecliptic from one new moon to the next are, according to tablet number 272, on the average of 3 degrees 14 minutes too great. This means that during a lunar month, the moon moved a greater distance in relation to the fixed stars than present observation shows. In tablet number 32, the movement of the sun along the zodiac is precisely calculated in degrees, and the station of the sun at the beginning of each lunar month is determined exactly. But it is, quote, a perplexing presentation of the ununiform movement of the sun. The question is insistent. Why is it that Babylonians formulated the non-uniformity of the solar movement precisely in this way? End quote. As the various systems recorded in the astronomical tablets of Nineveh show, the world order changed repeatedly in the course of a single century. Hence, the Chaldean astronomers had the task of repeatedly readjusting the calendar. Quote, from certain passages in the astrological tablets, it is easy to see that the calculation of times and seasons was one of the chief duties of the astrologers in Mesopotamia. End quote. The scholars ask, how could these men, employed for that very purpose, have made the egregious mistakes recorded in the tablets and carried these mistakes over into systems in which the movements of the sun, the moon, and the five planets were recorded with repetitions at regular intervals, these movements and intervals being consistently different from those of the present celestial order? How could the stargazers who composed the earlier tablets be so careless as to maintain that the year is 360 days long, a mistake that in 6 years accumulates to a full month of divergence? Or how could the astronomers of the royal observatories announce to the king the movements of the moon and its phases on wrong dates, though a child can tell when the moon is new, and then record all this in very scholarly tablets requiring advanced mathematical knowledge? Hence, scholars speak, quote, of enigmatic mistakes. C. Betzold expresses the opinion that before the 6th century, the Babylonians were unaware of the relative lengths of the solar year and 12 lunar months. However, it appears to us that the tablets, with their changing astronomical systems, reflect the changing order of the world and consequent attempts to adjust the calendar to the changes. When the cataclysm of the 23rd of March, 687 BC, brought about another disturbance in the length of the year and the month, the new standards remained uncertain until they could be calculated anew in a series of investigations. From the time of that catastrophe until the year 669 or 667 BC, no New Year festivals were observed at Babylon. Quote, 8 years under Sennacherib, 12 years under Esarhaddon, for 20 years, the New Year's festival was omitted, says an ancient chronicle on a clay tablet. According to cuneiform inscriptions, in the days of Sargon II, a new world age began, and in the days of his son Sennacherib, another world age. In the days of Assurbanipal, son of Esarhaddon, son of Sennacherib, the planetary movements, the precession of the equinoxes, and the periodic returns of the eclipses were recalculated, and these new tablets, together with the older ones, or copies of the older ones, were stored in the palace library at Nineveh. The tablets from Nineveh provide the best possible opportunity to learn how the order of the world changed in the 8th and 7th centuries. Repeated changes in the course of the sun across the firmament led the astronomers of Babylonia to distinguish three paths of the sun, the Anu path, the Enlil path, and the Ea path. These three paths created much difficulty for the writers on Babylonian astronomy, and many explanations were offered and as many rejected. The Anu, Enlil, and Ea paths of the planets across the sky appear to denote the successive ecliptics in various world ages. Like the sun, the planets in different times moved along the Anu, Enlil, and Ea paths. In the Talmud, a number of scattered passages deal with a calendric change made by Hezekiah. The Talmud was written about 1,000 years after Hezekiah, and not all details of the reform are preserved. It states that Hezekiah doubled the month of Nisan. In later times, in order to adjust the lunar year to the solar year, an intercalary month was added every few years by doubling the last month of the year, Adar. This system of an intercalary Adar is preserved in the Hebrew calendar to this day. The rabbis wondered why Hezekiah added another Nisan, the first month. The story is told in the scriptures that Hezekiah, instead of celebrating Passover in the first month, put off the feast to the second month. The Talmud explains that it was not the second month, but an additional Nisan. It must be noted that in Judea, in the days of Hezekiah, the months were not called by Babylonian names, and therefore the situation should be stated as follows. Hezekiah, after the death of Ahaz and before the second invasion of Sennacherib, added a month and postponed the feast of Passover. According to the Talmud, this was done to make the lunar year correspond more closely to the solar year. As we shall see, there appears to be some similarity between this action and that by Numa at about the same time. What permanent changes Hezekiah introduced in the calendar is not stated, but it is apparent that at that time calendar reckoning became a complicated matter, as Moses in his day, quote, could not understand how to compute the calendar until God showed him the movements of the moon plainly, end quote. So, in the days of Hezekiah, the determination of the month and of the year became a matter not of calculation, but of direct observation, and could not be performed much in advance. Isaiah called the astrologers, quote, the monthly prognostic. As we have already said, there is in the Talmud the information that the Temple of Solomon was built so that on the equinoctial days of the year, the direction of the rays of the rising sun could be tested. A gold plate or disc was affixed to the eastern gate. Through it, the rays of the rising sun fell into the heart of the temple. The festival of the tabernacle, Sukkoth, quote, was originally an equinoctial festival, as Exodus 23:16 and 34:22 state explicitly, celebrated during the last 7 days of the year and immediately preceding the New Year's Day, the day of the fall equinox, upon the 10th of the 7th month. In other words, New Year's Day, or the day of the autumnal equinox, was observed on the 10th day of the 7th month, the day when the sun rose exactly in the east and set exactly in the west, the day of atonement falling on the same day. Thereafter, the day of the new year was moved back to the first day of the 7th month. We may note that not only on the Jewish calendar, but also according to the Babylonian tablets, the equinoctial dates were displaced by 9 days. One tablet says that in the spring, day and night are equal on the 15th of the month Nisan. Another tablet says that it takes place on the 6th of the same month. This indicates that the change in the calendar of the feasts observed in Jerusalem followed astronomical changes. The eastern gate of the Temple of Jerusalem was no longer correctly oriented after the cardinal points had become displaced. On his accession to the throne following the death of Ahaz, Hezekiah, quote, inaugurated a sweeping religious reformation. 2 Chronicles chapter 29 verse 3 says, he in the first year of his reign, in the first month, opened the doors of the house of the Lord and repaired them. Apparently, the natural changes in terrestrial rotation, which took place in the days of Uzziah and again on the day of the burial of Ahaz, necessitated a reform. Hezekiah therefore gathered the priests, quote, into the east street and spoke to them, saying that our fathers have trespassed and have shut up the doors of the porch. In the pre-exilic period, it was held, quote, to be of imperative necessity that on 2 days of the year the sun shone directly through the eastern gate, and through all the eastern gates of the temple arranged in line, directly into the very heart of the temple proper. The eastern gate, also called sun gate, served not only to check on the equinoxes, when the sun rises exactly in the east, but on the solstices as well. A device on the eastern gate was designed to reflect the first rays of the sun on the summer and winter solstices, when the sun rises in the southeast and the northeast, respectively. According to Talmudic authorities, the early prophets experienced much difficulty in making this arrangement work. From biblical times, vestiges of the three-calendar system remain, and this assumes a special interest in view of the fact we noted some pages back. Namely, the tablets from Nineveh record three different systems of solar and planetary movements, each of which is complete in itself and differs from the others at every point. It appears that the adjustment of the calendar following the initiation of the New World Order in the days of Hezekiah was a long and tedious process. As late as 100 years after Hezekiah, during the Babylonian exile, in the days of Solon and Thales, Jeremiah, Baruch, and Ezekiel drew up the calendar from year to year. When the Jews returned from the Babylonian exile, they brought with them their present calendar, in which the months are also called by Assyro-Babylonian names. Quote, "For as the new heavens and the new earth, which I will make, shall remain before me, saith the Lord, so shall your seed and your name remain," reads the closing chapter of the book of Isaiah. All flesh will come to worship the Lord, quote, "from one new moon to another, and from one Sabbath to another." The new heavens means a sky with constellations of luminaries in new places. The prophet promises that the new sky will be everlasting, and that the months will keep forever in their established order. Daniel, the Jewish sage at the court of Nebuchadnezzar, king of the exile, when blessing the Lord, said to the king, "He changeth the times and the seasons." This is a remarkable sentence, which is also preserved in many Jewish prayers. By the change of seasons, or appointed dates, moedim, is meant an alteration in the order of nature, with shifting of solstitial and equinoctial dates and the festivals connected with them. The change of times could refer not only to the last change, but to the previous ones also, and it was, quote, "the change of the times and the seasons that was followed by calendar reforms." The old Hindu astronomical observations offer a set of calculations different from those of the present day. Quote, "What is extraordinary are the durations assigned to the synodical revolutions. To meet in Hindu astronomy with a set of numerical quantities widely differing from those generally accepted is indeed so startling that one at first feels strongly inclined to doubt the soundness of the text. Moreover, each figure is given twice over." In the astronomical works of Varaha Mihira, the recorded synodical revolutions of the planets, which are easy to calculate against the background of the fixed stars, are about 5 days too short for Saturn, over 5 days too short for Jupiter, 11 days too short for Mars, 8 or 9 days too short for Venus, less than 2 days too short for Mercury. In a solar system in which the Earth revolves around the Sun in 360 days, the synodical periods of Jupiter and Saturn would be about 5 days shorter than they are at present, and that of Mercury less than 2 days shorter. But Mars and Venus of the synodical table of Varaha Mihira must have had orbits different from their present ones, even if the terrestrial year was only 360 days. Calendric changes in India were effected in the 7th century. At that time, as in China also, the 10-month year was supplanted by a 12-month year. In the 8th century, a calendar reform was made in Egypt. We have already referred to a cataclysm during the reign of the pharaoh Osorkon II of the Libyan dynasty. Another disturbance of a cosmic nature took place a few decades later, still in the time of the Libyan dynasty. In the 15th year of the reign of Sosenk III, quote, "there occurred a remarkable prodigy of uncertain nature, but in some way connected with the moon," unquote. The contemporaneous document written by the royal son, the high priest Osorkon, reads, "In the year 15, fourth month of the third season, 25th day, under the majesty of his august father, the divine ruler of Thebes, before heaven devoured, or not devoured, the moon, great wrath arose in this land." End quote. The mutilated condition of the inscription makes it impossible to determine the exact nature of the calendric reform. It appears that the same or a similar disturbance in the movement of the moon is the subject of an Assyrian inscription which speaks of the moon being obstructed on its way. Quote, "Day and night it was handicapped. In its august station it did not stand." End quote. Because of the duration of the phenomenon, it is concluded that, quote, "it could not mean an eclipse of the moon." End quote. The reference to the moon's unwonted position also precludes such an interpretation. At the end of the 8th or the beginning of the 7th century before the present era, the people of Rome introduced a calendar reform. In the preceding section, we referred to Ovid's statement in Fasti concerning the reform of Romulus, who divided the year into 10 months, and the reform of Numa, who prefixed 2 months. Plutarch's Life of Numa contains the following passage, part of which has already been quoted. "He," Numa, "applied himself also to the adjustment of the calendar, not with exactness, and yet not altogether with careful observation. For during the reign of Romulus, they had been irrational and irregular in their fixing of the months, reckoning some at less than 20 days, some at 35, and some at more. They had no idea of the inequality in the annual motions of the sun and moon, but held to the principle only that the year should consist of 360 days. Numa reformed the calendar, and the, quote, correction of the inequality which he made was destined to require other and greater corrections in the future. He also changed the order of the months. Numa was a contemporary of Hezekiah. In the second half of the 7th century before the present era, the length of the new month and the new year was calculated by the Greeks. Diogenes Laertius regarded Thales the Milesian, one of the seven sages of antiquity, as the man who discovered the number of days in the year and the length of the seasons. In The Life of Thales, he wrote, "He was the first to determine the sun's course from solstice to solstice." And again, "He is said to have discovered the seasons of the year and to have divided it into 365 days. He was the first to predict eclipses of the sun and to fix the solstices." Thales is said to have written two treatises, one on the solstice and the other on the equinox, neither of which is extant. If the natural year always was what it is now, it is very strange that this discovery should have been attributed to a sage who lived as late as the 7th century, when Egypt and Assyria were already very old kingdoms, and when the dynasty of David was in its last decades. The longest and shortest days of the year, and thus the length of the year, are easily determined by the length of the shadow. Thales is said to have been born in the first year of the 35th Olympiad, or 640 BC. The progress of culture would hardly leave to one and the same person the calculation of the days in a year, which is a simple matter, and the calculation of forthcoming eclipses, which is an advanced achievement. Similarly, the fact, as stated by Plutarch and Diogenes Laertius, that Solon, another sage of the same period, adjusted the months to the motion of the moon after finding that the time from one new moon to another is a half day shorter than 30 days, must be understood as an adjustment of the calendar to the new order in nature. The span of time from one new moon to another is a natural time division, almost as easily observable as day and night. Primitive peoples, unable to read or write, know that the period is less than 30 days. On the other side of the globe, the people of Peru reckon time from the day of the last cataclysm, and this method of computation was in use when the Europeans reached that country from the beginning of the 16th century. After the last cataclysm, the times and the seasons were computed anew. King Inti Kapak Yupanqui ordered astronomical observations and calculations to be made, the result of which was a calendar reform, and the year, previously of 360 days, quote, was changed to 365 days and 6 hours. This Inca appears to have been the first to order and settle ceremonies. He it was who established the 12 months of the year, giving a name to each and ordaining the ceremonies that were to be observed in each. For although his ancestors used months and years counted by the Quipus, yet they were never previously regulated in such order until the time of this lord. All Toltec histories mention an assembly of sages and astrologers that was convoked in the city of Huehuetlapalan for the purpose of working on the correction of the calendar and the reforming of the computation of the year, which was recognized as erroneous and which had been employed until that time. Half a meridian away, across the Pacific Ocean, a calendar was introduced in Japan in 660 BC, and the reckoning of years in that country starts from that year. In China, the astronomer Wai Hang, in the year 721 BC, announced to the emperor Huan Song that the order of the sky and the movements of the planets had changed, which made it impossible to predict eclipses, and he referred to other authorities who asserted that in the time of Qin, the planet Venus used to move 40 degrees to the south of the ecliptic and eclipse the star Sirius. Wai Hang explained that the course of the planet Venus changed in the days of Tsin. All around the globe, the years following 687 BC saw activity directed toward reforming the calendar. Between 747 and 687 BC, the calendar was in a chaotic state, the length of the year and of the month, and probably also of the day, repeatedly changing. Before the 8th century, there was a comparatively long span of time when the year had 360 days and the lunar month consisted of almost exactly 30 days. Neither the calendar, nor the celestial charts, nor the sundials, nor the water clocks of the time before 687 BC were adequate for their purpose after that year. Values subsequently established in different parts of the terrestrial globe have remained practically unchanged down to the present, save for very small improvements resulting from the more precise calculations of modern times. This stability of the calendar is due to the fact that the celestial order has remained unaltered. No changes in the heavenly order were observed except for minor perturbations between the planets, which have no visible effect on their motion. Thus, we are lulled into the belief, which is wishful thinking, that we live in an orderly universe. In the language of a modern scientist, though the order of the succession of events in the heavens is often somewhat complex, it is nevertheless systematic and invariable. The running of no clock ever approached in precision the motions of the sun, the moon, and the stars. In fact, to this day, clocks are regulated by comparing them with the apparent diurnal motions of the heavenly bodies. Since not merely a few, but hundreds of celestial phenomena were long ago found to be perfectly orderly, it was gradually perceived that majestic order prevails universally in those regions in which, before the birth of science, capricious gods and goddesses were believed to hold domain. However, as we have learned from the records of ancient times, the order today is not the primeval order. It was established less than 27 centuries ago, quote, when the moon was placed in orbit, when the silver sun was planted, when the bear was firmly stationed. From Calival's Rune.